I woke up one morning this week to my neighborhood gang of crows making weird vocalizations, and I looked across Peabody Street to see five crows standing in a circle on the strip of grass between the sidewalk and the street. There was something brown low on the grass at the center of their group, and with a sinking heart, I headed out to investigate. Yep, it was the cottontail rabbit that spends a lot of time in my yard. It was apparently run over by a car during the night. If I were any kind of gardener, I probably wouldn't have felt the least bit sad, but I'm not, and this rabbit was a small but regular part of my daily life. I knew it would eventually come to a bad end. Several times I've had to slow down more than my usual slow speed in order to avoid hitting it, and since I live on a corner, that raises the number of directions cars can come from. But somehow, each time I saw it, I felt a small surge of triumph that it was beating the odds, and also I was happy that it was staying mostly on my side of the avenue, away from a neighborhood friend's exquisite and lovingly tended garden. This rabbit wasn't fussy. It seemed perfectly content to stick around my yard, where any plants that require tending or guarding from squirrels and rabbits and birds died out long ago. It may even be the same rabbit that my dogs Betsy and Photon made friends with when it was a baby. Whatever lovely inner spirit I sensed in my rabbit is gone now, perhaps in a bunny heaven where all the plants are succulent and tended to by naughty cats forced to serve as gardeners in what for them is cat hell. Wherever the bunny spirit was, its flattened body was down in the grass, surrounded by five crows enjoying breakfast. Some carcasses are hard to break into, but summertime rabbits are not among them. This one was quite fresh, and based on the gusto with which the crows dug in, absolutely delectable. One adult fed itself in between breaking off goopy chunks of meat for its squawking baby. I have to laugh at fledglings this time of year. This one was fully as big as its long-suffering mother or father, only its red mouth linings and insistent nasal voice to betray its immaturity. Crows came and went throughout the morning, pigging out and then flying to Russ's cherry trees for dessert. By late afternoon, they'd lost interest in the rabbit, and by next day were nowhere to be found. Crows patrolled the streets in my neighborhood every morning, searching for fresh carcasses. They're not stupid. I wouldn't eat meat that sat out for 12 hours or more on a hot summer day, and neither do they, especially when cars are constantly hitting new animals, providing an endless supply of fresh meat, from frogs, toads, mice, and large insects, to rabbits and squirrels, and even an occasional deer. A lot of people think there are too many crows, and my neighborhood robins and small songbirds would agree. When crows are feeding their own hungry nestlings, they raid other birds' nests. The one single factor that controls the number of crows in most areas is food availability. As long as we drive faster than we can respond to small animals in the road ahead, there will always be crows to eat the fresh carcasses, and there'll always be old rotting carcasses that they ignore. My poor dead bunny didn't know it was being eaten, and from my viewpoint it was just as well the rabbit was useful for something, but it would have been better all the way around if someone had been driving slow enough to react to a rabbit in the road, especially on a block where small children live too. Slowing down improves gas mileage and reduces carbon dioxide and other pollutant emissions and saves money, and it would have saved my bunny. Production of For the Birds is supported by KUMD and binoculars.com. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.